Blog Talk Radio.
Slow down, touch your life. Don't you know there's friends to be found? Lift your eyes and see the world.
Welcome to the Sunbury Press Book Show on the BookSpeak Network, sponsored by Sunbury Press, publisher of paperback, hardcover, and electronic books in a variety of categories distributed worldwide wherever books are sold. I'm your host, Lawrence Knorr, and this evening we have author and historian John Lindermuth, who's written a book, Hear the Whistle Blowing, Railroading in the Coal Region. John Lindermuth surveys the history of railroading in the coal region of Pennsylvania from its earliest days to the introduction of diesel engines. Lindermuth covers railroad towns, daily life, working on the railroad, sounds like a song, accidents, labor woes, innovations, and other topics. John is a native of Shamokin in Northumberland County, Pennsylvania, and he was a newspaperman for many years, over 40 years, now retired. Serving now in his retirement as a librarian at the Northumberland County Historical Society. John, welcome. Great to talk to you. How you been?
Thank you. Glad for the opportunity.
This is a very interesting book. At Sunbury Press, we always love to get into history, and we also especially like the history of that Susquehanna Valley, especially upriver where you're from. I guess the first question I have for you is your interest in railroads. Where did that come from? What piqued your interest on this book?
Well, I come from a family of railroaders. My father, my grandfather, great-grandfather, they were all railroaders, a couple of uncles. I never took to the rails, but I heard a lot about them growing up.
So what time frame, you knew your grandfather?
I knew my grandfather, yes.
Did he tell you stories about back in those days?
Yeah, he had to retire early. He had a heart problem, and growing up, I spent a lot of time with him. One of the things we used to do was walk down to see the trains come in every day.
Yeah, so what were his, when was he born and when did he pass?
He was born in 1885 and died in 1956.
So he was, on the railroad maybe around right before World War I and that era?
Yes.
So you have any interesting stories he used to tell you? Were there any big crashes or wrecks or railroad heists or anything exciting like that?
Well, his father... My great-grandfather was actually killed in a railroad accident in Shamokin. And I heard that story many times.
So what? Which railroads were going through Shamokin back in those times?
The Reading and the Pennsylvania.
Yeah. So my family's
affiliated with the Reading.
Yeah. So two huge corporations at one time back in those days, and of course they're both on the monopoly board.
Yes.
But was it the Reading or the Pennsylvania that was the largest corporation in the world at one time? I think it was the Reading.
The Pennsylvania.
It was the Pennsylvania.
The Reading was large because of its coal holdings.
So that, I'm guessing that was probably the main... cargo coming out of the Shamokin area had to be the anthracite.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where all it went? Was it mostly going to Philly and then distributed it on, rails elsewhere, or was it going on the ships? Or
it went to it went to Philly. It went to Maryland, to Baltimore. There were also lines that went up to New York.
But tell me about
pretty good portion of the East Coast.
Yeah, it had to have been if it was the largest corporation at one time. If you think about it, Pennsylvania was like Texas became for oil, almost like how Saudi Arabia is for oil these days. And, you know, I tell people, when we talk about Pennsylvania history, Pennsylvania was sort of like the Silicon Valley of the 1800s. So much industry, so much technology and growth, and it's an amazing time to have lived here. It still is, I guess. A lot of history.
The anthracite actually fueled most of the other industries at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it, you know, literally fueled all the other industries. Yeah. So tell me about Shamokin. I know Shamokin, I've been up that way, and I just love the landscape there. In fact, the cemetery is really kind of quaint, too. It's a little creepy, but, you know, a nice hilly town. And although it's definitely seen better days, what's going on in Shamokin these days? And maybe tell us a little bit about your youth in Shamokin.
Well, I was growing up at the end of Cole's demise, and it's gone downhill since then as far as employment is concerned. We had the coal and we had the silk mills at one time, but now we're pretty much dependent on people traveling elsewhere for jobs other than government jobs, local.
Yeah.
And there's, of course, a prison. We have a prison that employs a good portion of the population now, too.
Yeah, that's not the best kind of employer, though.
No.
Yeah, I remember going through a couple times and getting out and photographing. I like to get out and take my camera, and there's just a lot of photogenic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of run down and worn out and dilapidated. How many homes in Shamokin do you think are unoccupied? Is there a number on that?
I don't know offhand, but there certainly are a lot now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too bad. And you're still living in the area?
I live in Cole Township on the outskirts of Shamokin.
Yeah, I know there's still some very nice neighborhoods. There was a book we did, A Short Season, published it earlier last year, and there was a large number of orders from up your way.
Mm-hmm.
Josiah, the subject of the book, was from Higgins, the Higgins area.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, I say up your way, it's still like, 20, 30 miles from you.
Yeah, it's in the same county, but not right next door.
But there were people from pretty much from Northumberland, Shamokin, Sunbury, up to Bloomsburg ordering this book. And I had like 200 copies or so to deliver. And I thought, well, instead of mailing them, I'm just going to drive up there and loop around in the country and enjoy myself. And so I got into Cole Township, got into Shamokin, and I saw that there still are some very nice homes, nice neighborhoods up that way. And but the center of the town, which at one time must have been quite a booming, bustling town, it definitely seen better days. And
The population is probably a third of what it was when I was growing up.
Really? Wow. So tell me some more about what's in your book, Hear the Whistle Blowing. Kind of take us through that. Give us some highlights. Why should somebody want to pick it up?
Well, I start with the history of how the railroads developed and then go on to the daily life of the workers and their families. There's information about the accidents, labor, the labor unions, how they developed, and of course down to the development of the diesel and then the demise of the industry. Although
yeah, so,
there's railroads in business, but it's not the same as it used to be either.
Yeah, so the peak was while it was still steam engines, maybe run by coal, fired by coal?
Yeah. The first engines were fueled by wood, but then when they learned how to burn anthracite, they switched over.
But tell me about some of the accidents. Was there a Was there a really nasty one at some point, a famous one, a couple famous ones?
Oh, there are. There was one where people were going down to New Jersey to down near Dunellen. There was a really terrible accident where 11 people from Shamokin and Mount Carmel were among the 13 who were killed in a head-on collision between two trains of the Lehigh Valley Railroad.
Yeah, it's head-on collisions. I'll get
it
you every time. Yeah, I have a, let me think, my great-grandmother's grandfather, last name was Ober. He was killed in a train wreck in Ohio, head-on collision, back probably about 1880-something, and left a lot of orphans. And I often thought, how many of these head-on collisions were there? Couldn't they come up with some technology or something to help prevent them? But,
well, they came up with better switching systems, and that was a big help in avoiding those head-on collisions.
Yeah.
That telegraphy, of course, so that they could tell where they were.
Right, right. Hopefully they knew where they were.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess thus the signs along the way and the water towers and all those other markers. And yeah, I've always been fascinated by the railroads. And I know that that area there in Sunbury along the river for quite some time, there was a lot of canal boats and going up and down the river. So what time do you think the railroad started to become prominent and the canal boats were fading out?
Well, the canal boats were prominent around our area in the 1830s, beginning in the 1830s. And then the railroads started coming in late in that same year or same time period. Probably by the 1840s and 50s, the railroads had taken over pretty much, but there were still canal boats moving. But
yeah,
they had lost out pretty much of the business to the railroads.
So maybe the era of the canal boats were probably only a couple decades?
Yes.
Yeah. But tell me what else about the area up there historically that's of interest. You're working at the Historical Society. What do people come in to see or talk about?
Well, in the Historical Society, they mainly come, a good portion of the people come to do genealogy on their families that originated in the area. But the Fort Augusta was built on the site of our Historical Society, and there's a lot of interest in that. Although there's nothing left of the fort anymore except the, we have a couple of cannons from the fort, and there's a well and a powder magazine.
So I know that the Indian village known as Shamokin, now you're from Shamokin, but you're from Shamokin, the coal mining town. Shamokin, the Indian village, was where present-day Sunbury is, if
right.
I'm not mistaken. What does the Historical Society have regarding those native inhabitants from years past? Are there any artifacts or...
We've had at least three digs on the site, because some of the Indian village was in that same area. So we have artifacts in our museum that were found on the site.
You know how big a village it was? How many people roughly they estimate were living there?
It probably covered a pretty good portion of the city along the river.
Yeah. I guess when they flooded, they just picked up and went up the hill. They weren't your Western Indians natives living in teepees. These were people probably in longhouses or more permanent structures.
Yeah, the Delaware or the Lenape had been conquered by the Iroquois, and the Iroquois were sort of guardians to them and to other tribes that lived in the area. And the fort that I mentioned was actually built at the request of the Indians to protect them from the French prior to the French and Indian War.
Ah. Yeah, I was wondering if that was one of the forts that Ben Franklin had planned along the rim of mountains, or the ridge, pretty much, around that time.
It was built for the French and Indian War, and then remained in service down to the Revolution. Although there were never any battles there.
Right.
They said at one point the French had come to Blue Hill across the river and saw the fortifications and turned around and went back.
So probably one of the most famous people from the area was Shikellamy.
Yes.
Who was the chief there for a while. I guess he was an Iroquois.
He was an Iroquois.
Yeah,
he was
so
the governor of the village.
Right. Do you know about what time period he was in that era? That was around the French and Indian War era, was it not?
He died. I think he actually died before the war. I think he died somewhere in the 1740s.
Yeah, I'm very interested in Conrad Weiser. And you know, the German, Pennsylvania German, and his role as an Indian interpreter, and I know he spent a lot of time up there in Shamokin, the Indian village, and Shikellamy was a friend, and the whole Tupelhockan Path comes into play with that. Steve Troutman's done an excellent book on that, and it also is the way that I believe my ancestors got into the Mahantonga Valley, following the Tupelhockan Path.
That would have been the path, right?
Yeah, taking the land there. So, Shikellamy, one question I've always had. We're working all the time on the Keystone Tombstone series of books and looking for interesting stories, interesting graves of noteworthy Pennsylvanians. I've always wondered about Shikellamy's grave, and I heard it's on an island in the river that the people of Shamokin, the Indian village, would go downriver a little bit to bury their dead.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that just a legend?
Well, there's speculation, but nothing firm. One group says that he was buried up the river, as you say, and then there's another marker just above us that says he was buried on that site.
Ah, okay.
And they did do a thing, and they did discover a body in that second site that I mentioned. But whether it was actually him, we don't know.
Yeah, I don't think you'd ever know. Yeah. So getting back to the railroads, now that we've kind of covered a huge swath of history here from Native Americans to the present, the Tupelhockan Path, was that, did that come into play at all with the railroads, or how were the railroads routed through the area up there? Where did what towns did you connect to come on down to Reading and Philly?
I think the Reading followed the old Reading Road up to Reading and through Pottsville and up to Reading that way.
So that'd be Route 61.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Today, yeah.
But a lot of the railroads did follow the old Indian trails, depending on the lay of the land, where it was possible.
Yeah, I'm thinking about Troutman's book, and I'm not recalling much talk about railroad tracks. It's mostly still footpaths or
I think
dirt road, or
mainly footpaths.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've also written another book, Digging Dusky Diamonds, about coal mining. When did coal mining start up that way?
In the 1830s.
Now, I had heard there was a legend in Pottsville about Necco Allen.
Yes.
Was his name, discovering coal. Is that the story out in Shamokin way as well?
Well, Necco Allen discovered the coal up in the Schuylkill County area, but Tomlinson, another Quaker, discovered the first coal in this area, in Shamokin area. And of course,
so
I guess there were some earlier settlers that had seen the coal but didn't know what to do with it.
Right. Yeah. So there you are in Shamokin. Somebody finds coal, and, you know, there's a couple mountains that Shamokin sort of sits between and on. I'm assuming those mountains were probably just filled with coal underneath, veins of coal.
Some of them are, yes.
Yeah,
and they did, of course, do surveys on all of them.
Right. So what was in Shamokin around that time? Was it even much of a town, a trading post, just a couple settlers here and there?
There were three or four, mostly doing timbering. Timbering and farming at the time.
So then the coal's discovered, and then it's a boom town?
Basically, yes.
Because it seems like a lot of the architecture around town is Victorian, probably late Victorian. So what would you say the peak was for Shamokin? Maybe 1880, 1890?
Probably in the 1880s, 1890s, yeah.
Yeah.
And some of the large colonial homes, not colonial, but Victorian homes on Sunbury Street, which was where a lot of the mine owners lived, are evidence of how much money they made.
Yeah.
And none of those families stayed afterward.
Yeah. Is there an effort to maintain or restore or, you know, keep some of those historic places?
Some of them have been restored and are still occupied. Others have fallen into ruin or become nursing homes or office buildings.
Yeah. Now, has fracking had any impact on Shamokin? Has there been any gas discovered up that way?
Nothing very significant yet around here.
Yeah.
Other parts of the county, yes, but not so much around here.
So if I was to come on up to Shamokin and say, hey, John, show me the two or three most interesting things around here, where would you take me first?
Well, the coal mines are gone. The collieries are gone.
Any of the breakers still up there, or are they all fallen down?
They're all pretty much gone, too, yes. Probably have to take you up to Ashland to see the Pioneer Tunnel.
What's in the Pioneer Tunnel?
The Pioneer Tunnel is a tourist attraction. It's an actual old working mine that has been converted to tourism. And the state has a mining museum there right next to it.
Oh, cool. I've never done that. That might be worth a trip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anything down Sunbury Way?
Sunbury have the Edison Hotel, of course.
Right.
We have maps for a walking tour of some of the historic homes in Sunbury.
I know Northumberland, you've got Priestley.
Northumberland, there's also a walking tour over there, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you know about Joseph Priestley? Anything?
I know when he came and why he came. I've been
that
in
was
the
my
house.
First question to me. Why?
Why?
Why did Joseph Priestley evolve?
Well, actually, his son and Samuel Coleridge, the poet, planned to come over here and start a utopian community. And of course, Coleridge never came, but Priestley's son did, and bought some land, and his father followed him over, and of course they never founded the utopian community, but at least it brought him here.
Yeah. And he was up there, what, like just after the revolution?
Yes.
Well, yeah. Yeah, so I'm trying to place, I'm thinking about my own family history in the Mahantongo Valley, and I know before the French and Indian War, there wasn't a lot of settlement into those lands. I don't think they had actually been purchased yet from the natives.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that area there from Northumberland, Shamokin, Sunbury was the edge of the frontier at one point in Pennsylvania, I believe.
Yeah, it was only open to settlement in 1769. So.
Right, right. Interesting. Well, you've also been writing some fiction, I see. I know we've got a couple of your books. Maybe you could talk about your interest there. These are historical mysteries?
Well, I started out just writing conventional mysteries, and then I got into the historical mysteries, and I found them more entertaining to write.
What do you enjoy more, writing real history or historical fiction?
I go back and forth between the two. I have an interest in both.
What are you working on now?
I always did want to write fiction.
Yeah. What are you working on now? You have anything new coming out soon?
Right now I'm working on a conventional mystery and another Western. I've published a couple of Westerns too.
Yeah, I saw that you have a pretty good list of books and with several publishers. And I appreciate the connection you made for us to Eileen Opser, who I'm forgetting the name of the press that went out of business, but she was one that we picked up.
Yeah, she was excited.
Very happy to find us.
To pick her up.
Yeah, yes, she was. I'm thinking, how do I get up there to visit her at some point? She's in the Hamptons.
Yeah.
go squat up in Long Island at some point. That'd be fun. Well, we got a couple of minutes to go here. Is there anything else you were thinking about with your railroad book or your coal mining book that you wanted to share?
I think if anybody has an interest in railroads, they'd find it of interest. And just the information on how the people lived at the time, because there's a lot of the information is taken from contemporary newspapers, so it gives an insight into some things that we don't actually think about that often, how tough their lives were.
Yeah, how many hours a day did they work?
Well, it was only in the 1920s, I think, that they got an 8-hour day. Before that, it was 12, 15 hours a day.
Wow.
7 days a week.
No wonder they sang that song, "I've been working on the railroad all the live long day."
All the live long day, yeah.
Really. All right, John. Well, it's been great talking to you this evening. We'll be talking to you again soon when the next book comes out.
All right. Thank you.
All right. We've been talking to John Lindermuth, the author of "Hear the Whistle Blowing, Railroading in the Coal Region." This has been the Sunbury Press Book Show. Thank you for listening.